Dieter and Jake on a Tuesday. 49ers still cooked, but I guess the question must be asked, Jake, can they save this thing? Can they bring it back from the depths of hell in which they've plunged into, or is this thing still done after we watched that Seattle All 22 and came away with some thoughts?
Yeah, it's I think it's cooked, but you know, again, there's enough talent on this team that anything's possible, right? I mean, if they were to split one of these two games, there's a chance. Mm-hmm. But the way it shapes up, I think, even if you're like pretty optimistic person and you say, all right, you know, Kittle comes back and they win one of these two games and, you know, they go on a run at the end of the year, all possible, very talented team, sure. I just think they don't
clap back on the very talented team thing. Like, where is that talent? I'm not seeing this very talented team. I see a team that commits a lot of penalties as of late, a team that has a couple of pretty good football players, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But this idea of this preponderance of talent, that's on name only, and the name is not lining up with what my eyes show me. And I just was quickly going through this, trying to come up with an explanation as to why the Niners are so bad without having to be like, well, you know, let's talk about third down protections again, or let's talk about man press coverage on the outside. Right. Like, we've done that. I was looking for something a little easier, more digestible. How about this, Jake? As of Sunday, their 10 highest paid players were all out or playing injured. They have a stars and scrubs roster, a top heavy roster, and their top 10 highest paid players all got something going on. That doesn't seem ideal. That seems like a good way to lose games. I can go through them if you'd want, but we generally
think that's healthy. That's actually healthy for us in the audience. But I do think, right, like there's a way to say, okay, you know, things just aren't going their way. But here's the thing about things not going their way with health. They're an old roster that mm-hmm. is stars and scrubs mm-hmm. that bet and doubled down on this mm-hmm. old roster. And they just came off a very long season for what, the third straight year?
Yesterday was their 70th game since the start of 2021. Yesterday being Sunday. They didn't play again on Monday. That would be, I think, illegal in many states.
It's a lot of games. There's a lot of mileage on Christian McCaffrey and Debo Samuel and George Kittle and even Nick Bosa and especially Trent Williams. Like,
yep.
What did you think? It's not unreasonable. They got incredibly lucky last year with
that. They were fourth fewest adjusted games lost last year. And their depth was arguably worse last year, but it was not tested. And this year, we don't have that, you know, adjusted. That's something that gets adjusted when the season's over. But they got to be pretty high on the list. Yeah. I mean, again, Trent is playing at 65%, had to get shot up. Jarvarius Ward is out for personal reasons.
Wait, real quick, yeah. By the way. I know it's not like a surprise, but Kyle on the call being like, yeah, the tour at all. I just haven't heard an NFL coach mention that they're still all taking tour at all for a while. And made me chuckle.
Yeah. Well, you know, varsity blues, give them the shot. Ward's out for personal reasons. Bosa played through a hip injury and whoop, overcompensated. Now he's got an oblique injury. Warner's playing. He hasn't been the same player since he rolled his ankle against New England. He just hasn't. He's been good still, but he hasn't been as good as he was.
He was like playing like the greatest player in football for the first, you know, 4 or 5 games of the year.
Correct. And I think there's some tactical things that other teams are doing, knowing that he can beat you, but no one else really can. But
agreed.
He does not look as spry as he once did. And there's maybe a bit of hesitation in his game now, which can't have that at middle linebacker. It's not to say he's not great. It's just to say that he's a human still. Debo Samuel. We'll get into that. George Kittle missed last game with a hammy, same hamstring that he missed week 3 with, just a human hand grenade. CMC, we'll get into that. Javon Hargrave is out, Ayuk is out, Greenlaw is out. Oh, and Hufanga's out. So it's actually the top 11 highest paid players on this team. And 13 of the top 14, because Juice should be in concussion protocol after being knocked out cold. And
that was insane. I still can't get over that he just, and maybe it was something else, but it looked very clearly like he got knocked out cold and then just came back.
I'm good. A little smelling salts. We saw that with Brock was it last year or the year before?
It was I forget exactly which game it was, but they missed a QB sneak. And then on the second one, he went back for it, got concussed,
Minnesota,
came back into the game and threw like two interceptions pretty much straight away. And then later went into the concussion protocol and got out of it in a week.
Listen, I'm not saying Kyle Juszczyk is the key to winning or losing football games anymore. But when you have this, when you have back-to-back abysmal drafts in 22 and 23, of which you get one good player out of both of them, Jair Brown and Brock Purdy, respectively. Now you're relying on rookies this year, free agents. That's going great. Free agents pickups are going awesome. Can't say enough about it. Guys that you bring it up off the practice squad after letting them season for a while. This is just not a very good football team. And a lot of people are going in on Kyle. We heard that on Sunday Night Live. Like, I get it, right? Things are going wrong. This football team's heading in the wrong direction. People are going to go after the coach. Kyle does not get exonerated from blame here. He needs to adjust to the personnel that he has and understand that some of the guys who he used to be able to rely on aren't reliable anymore. But ultimately, this is a roster issue. We highlighted it ad nauseum in July, in August, in September. Then you left. We came back, and we're like, I still don't feel good about this roster, Jim. And this sits somewhere far above Kyle's head. Kyle's part of those conversations. It sits with just fate and bad luck mixed with a potent combination for letdown, not just coming off the Super Bowl, but also aging bodies. It's all gone to hell, Hutch.
Yeah.
And I guess if they can beat Green Bay, it's fine. I don't know.
I mean, listen, like there's a chance they beat Green Bay and they're at 500 and then they just get destroyed by the Bills. Whatever, you know,
how does that change things? Like if they lose to Green Bay, but beat the Bills, or if they beat Green Bay and then lose to the Bills, like how does that play out?
It's just a win. It's better to have it in the same conference, you know, against Green Bay, but they just need to somehow get hot at the end of this year. And it's just this thing of I'm saying it's not impossible, even though I think this thing is cooked, right? I'm really playing devil's advocate with myself. Meanwhile, yesterday, what I was doing is I was looking at what offseason moves I would make, because that's really where I'm at mentally with this team, is what should they do in the draft? What should they do in free agency?
Right.
And which players are you know, sort of done with and should move on from? Like, you got just an aging roster of a lot of guys that you don't really need anymore and are not fitting a timeline. You kind of need to retool, and 49ers are going to have like 12, 13 draft picks or something like that. Might be 11.
They're going to have a few
to go do that. And they'll have a little bit of cap space somehow.
You're saying this is going to be last year's Rams team is effectively what you're pushing. Like, you have a couple of good players, but we're going to do a hard reset, at least on one side of the ball, be that offense or defense. The issue that I have, Jake, is Deebo Samuel is a $10 million dead cap hit if you cut him after June 1st. That's the good thing. That's the winning scenario. They did that with Armstead last year. I know the cap keeps going up. No one's going to trade for him. Christian McCaffrey is still... Actually, let's just go in on McCaffrey before we get into the Deebo contract stuff. It ain't right. I know I did 4 hours...
He said it himself.
Yeah. I understand and provide deference to the idea that he just missed 3 months. Right? Everyone goes, oh, he missed, you know, 8 weeks. No, he missed the entirety of training camp, then the first 2 months of the season. So I can understand that it's going to take him some time to get back into it and that maybe his best is there, but he just needs some time. The problem is the last thing that the Niners have is time. How long are you willing to wait to see if Christian McCaffrey can find the old Christian McCaffrey, if it exists at all, before you say, okay, we can't use this guy as much because he's not as explosive a weapon and we need to use Mason and Garendo more because at least they can provide, in Mason's case, some heavy-headed running back play. And in the case of Garendo, some home run hitting opportunities. Like, that is a really tough question for Kyle, because Christian still forces teams to play zone against him. Like, at least that threat still persists. Maybe that changes this week. Maybe Jeff Hafley just decides, now we're not worried about him. We're going to find out. But how long can the Niners wait for Christian McCaffrey to find himself? Because as it stands now, I think it might be too long. And then the season.
I mean, that's what we were saying weeks ago, is like, they're betting this entire season on him coming back and being sort of the same version of himself. And it's, to his own admission, he's like, well, yeah, I'm healthy, but I kind of don't feel like myself. But anyway, I should be playing better. It was just weird. And it was him admitting that he's not himself. He doesn't feel like himself. And you see it on tape. There's just where he should go one cut and go. Yeah. There's a couple extra steps in there of him cutting or deciding or not taking a cutback lane that in the past you'd say, okay, the play is supposed to go to the left, but I'm seeing something open up and I'm going to attack it. And I know that's can be overly simplistic.
Nope.
But just the way he's operating, it's like he doesn't have full confidence in where he's at, and he doesn't have the same sort of juice. There are a couple plays where you see it, but it's not consistent every single play with him.
Yeah, he's a one cut and go back, right? That's the brilliance of him inside and outside zone scheme. This is one cut, five steps, and then maybe I go. There's a lot of choppiness, which is the exact opposite of what you would say about McCaffrey. McCaffrey's superpower was that it looked like he was gliding. Like when he would run at his best, he looked like he was barely touching the ground, like he was ice skating across the field. It was, I mean, at his best, he is a beautiful football player to watch. He just looks like a guy. There's no glide. There's no smoothness to his gait. It's him struggling to get to the mesh point, getting there, getting the ball, and then tapping, just like he's tap dancing in the backfield, waiting for something. And again, the offensive line is not holding up its end of the bargain. We can absolutely say that, but this is the same fucking offensive line
he hasn't been last year. He has not been additive in the run game. Like,
he's one of the worst running backs in the NFL on expected yards over
expected. Yeah. I think it's minus. I think he's 24th worst out of 280 guys, and Debo's 13th worst.
Debo's the worst when it comes to average rush. It's minus 1.5 yards per rush. Christian McCaffrey's minus 1 per rush. Like, but Mason and Garendo, as you pointed out on Blue Sky, I don't know where you're posting that stuff.
I don't know where I'm posting stuff either.
But like, as you pointed out with those guys were both getting well above. And that's with Garendo running into his guard's ass 4 times out of 5, but he gets the 75-yard gain after that. So I'm fascinated to see how Kyle manages this, because he's clearly trying to ride the old mules down to the watering hole one more time.
And I think part of that is, you know, yes, you can trust McCaffrey in every facet of the game. And somebody was snarky to me about Garendo can't pass protect. I know that, like, no shit. And McCaffrey can pass protect. Yeah, that, of course that matters. No one's saying play Garendo every snap over McCaffrey. We're saying the guy is in himself, and you need to mix it up a little bit, and you have some guys who bring something different to the table. We saw
Trent Williams at 65%. Trent Williams at 65% looks like a average tackle in the NFL, right? He's 30-something percent better than average on a day-in, day-out basis. Because I don't think he had a terrible game. I just thought he had an average game for a left tackle. Christian McCaffrey at his best is probably 20 to 30% better than an average running back. He looks like an average running back. And in fact, some of the data might indicate, I mean, my eyes tell me that he might not even be that. The data kind of backs that up, where you just go, oh boy.
Right. And you go back to the offensive line.
Is he a little bit better? Is Mason average? Is Garendo average? I think they're a little bit better than average.
I agree. And I think that's, Mason was number 2 and number 1 for a while in rushing yards over expected. And I know
some of these advanced
stats, whatever. But like, the 49ers offensive line has not been its dominant road grading self this season in the run game. And when you don't have that, you need your running back to be a playmaker when there's not everything there. And then once Mason got the shoulder hurt, it didn't look like it as much anymore. But he's also had kind of 2 weeks to really rest it. Maybe that's part of the equation. But I just fundamentally think when you're not being additive and your offensive line is, for the most part, not blocking exceptionally well mm-hmm. in the run game, you do need to turn to some running backs who have a little bit more juice, especially when you're going to commit to the run game and go with, you know, Jalen Moore as your sixth man, right? You know,
why just
you're why dictating you just that you're going to run anyway.
Exactly. So, why don't you just give the play call to the other team instead of playing Jake Tonjes? That's the beauty of Kittle, is that it can be anything. He can do anything on the football field. And so Kyle has defenses hesitating at the very least, if not just running strict out of position as it pertains to McCaffrey, as it pertains to Debo, as it pertains to Kittle, the versatility juice to whatever degree that's worth. The versatility of those guys forces defense to hesitate. And Kyle, in his ideal world with an ideal quarterback and an ideal protect, all these things, just destroys you on hesitation. That's the hallmark. And yet he doesn't have any versatility in this offense outside of Kittle right now. And Kittle wasn't playing. And instead of going and playing your number two and three tight ends, who you have kept on this roster, what, so they can block for field goals? Like, instead of playing those guys, they kept Saubert, who was sick, out there for 50-something percent of the snaps. And then, instead of using those backup tight ends, who, again, you're carrying on your roster, decided Jalen Moore, backup left tackle, swing tackle, was a better option. It's the opposite of versatility. Unless you wanted to throw a pass to Jalen Moore early just to establish a toe.
They should have.
Especially in the red zone. What if Jalen Moore was the answer to this team's red zone woes?
Maybe. And
can I go in on one thing? We didn't talk about it.
Go for it.
On Sunday. I did 4 hours with Kerry Crowley yesterday between 2 to 6. We did about 30 calls. I don't think we had a conversation during the show. It was just me yelling at callers. It was great radio. And 808KMBR is the number. A lot of folks came in and suggested that Kyle was derelict in his duties as a play caller by running or by throwing the ball on 2nd and 11 on that final, well, I guess it'd be penultimate offensive drive for the Niners. Right. So let's just go quickly establish the ground plan.
Right.
First play, they get the ball back after the fourth down stop. A should have been game winning defensive play. 4th and 1, 3rd and 1, stuff them. 4th and 1, stuff them. Okay. The Niners get a turnover on downs, 4th down. 11-yard rush for McCaffrey. Immediately followed by a defensive holding call. So now they have 2 first downs. The problem was 2 first downs was going to do it, except if you do them immediately. If you get 2 first downs immediately, you actually haven't used up enough clock. So now they need a 3rd first down. First play, they run outside zone left. Saubert misses his block entirely. Jennings doesn't get to where he needed to be. McCaffrey's tackled for -1. It is now 2nd and 11. They are at roughly midfield. They run.
There's like play. Three. Yeah, there's. I think the Seahawks call an immediate timeout. So it's what, like 3 minutes are left.
Correct. They run a play that is quintessential to their offense. A play that they ran twice against Tampa the week before in big fourth quarter situations. A play that they have run roughly a million times. This should be the staple of their passing game. And in fact, I have heard it described as an extension of the run game. It's such easy money. They get the exact look that they want. It is executed up until a point to perfection. It is a play action dig route play. Under center, play action to McCaffrey. He goes right. Brock sets up in the pocket. Debo's coming from the left over the middle, typically off of what would be outside leverage.
Yep.
Gets the angle on him, goes right over the middle. He is wide open. Now, he only has 1 or 2 steps as opposed to 3 or 4 steps because it's Debo and he gets out of his breaks slow now. That is par for the course. We'll go over that in Jake's film room for sure. But they have it. It's right there. And that's the first down. That's the game. Debo gets out of his break slow. Brock still finds a way to throw it behind him and over him. Uncatchable ball. I'm not putting it on Debo. If he would have caught it, he would have herniated a disc in the process. People got on Kyle for not running the ball there, forcing Seattle to take another timeout. I call such horseshit on that. You ran a play that you should execute 100 times out of 100. You only execute it 99 times out of 100 to win the goddamn game. It's over if you complete that pass.
It's over. on a down in which they're thinking you might run it, so you get the right look.
Correct.
Because that's why you can run play action there and run that play. You can't do it on third down.
If you told Kyle Shanahan beforehand how everything had worked out, save for the throw, he would run that play 100 times in a row. Anybody in their right mind would run that play. We have exactly what we're looking for to win the football game. It just needs to be executed, and Brock Purdy didn't execute it. Okay?
Yeah, I would say Brock was worried about the linebacker and should have maybe tried to throw out second window. He tried to fit it in, and I think he was in between deciding if he needed to layer it over and then just – I'm not defending him. I'm saying I think that's what he saw and why he messed up, but it was a terrible ball. It's a terrible pass.
Steph Curry at the free throw line.
Right.
You just expect it to be completed. You can't feel any better about it. It is the look. And so the idea that, you know, hindsight being 2020, oh, well, you could have run it again. Why don't you run outside zone again? Well, because you can really trust Saubert. You know, you're feeling so great. I guess we'll bring in Jalen Moore and really let him know that they can bring all 11 into the box so that you can actually get a block on the outside. And then on, you know, third down, we know what happens. And then, of course, a terrible punt. And then 11 plays go in the other direction. And I had, and we talked about this on Sunday, but I'll repeat my point. I don't have an issue with dropping into quarters and rushing four. I understand the threat and the how tired everybody was. Seattle's 20 points were all scored with Nick Bosa off the field. Only two touchdowns, Nick Bosa wasn't on the field. I get that you knew you didn't have Nick Bosa on the field, but ultimately that was your best pass rushing game in a long time, if not of the season. And you have to make a bet against that receiving crew versus that offensive line where the weak point is. And for me, 100 times in a row, I'm going to say I'm going after that offensive line again. I'm going to try to beat that offensive line. I'm going to try to beat Geno. I'm going to try to dare Geno into making tough throws. And I'm going to dare these wide receivers to find the soft spot again and again and again as we put pressure on Geno. And you know what? Tip your hat. He did it. So I don't think that that's anything on Sorensen. I think that that would have been what I would have done time and time again. You have Geno doing a jump pass past Fred Warner's arms. You have two great runs from Geno. You did sack him one time. Like, I don't have an issue with the play calling.
They're also a bottom 10 defense, you know, when they blitz. Like, they just aren't an effective blitzing defense. Which is not to say you can't blitz. They just don't execute it that well.
They blitzed once and it failed. It failed because Geno saw Diamador Lenore coming off the edge and said, oh, great, the flat will be wide open. You just vacated the flat. And he threw it to Jackson Smith and Jigba, who was in the flat. And if he had made one guy miss, he would have been in the end zone. He didn't. It was an 8-yard gain. And the next play, we know what happened. So you're a bad blitzing team. You're not structurally built to be a good blitzing team because you don't have versatility on that side of the field.
They're a very good defense when they don't blitz.
Correct. Trust your secondary. Trust your defensive line. And this is what you get. You got a defensive line that didn't get home. Repeatedly. Yetur Gross-Matos had a good game. Floyd had a good game. It wasn't good enough when it mattered most.
And when on that last drive, Geno just like took advantage of them getting too far out of their lanes and just went for it. Mm-hmm.
Get this. They can't set edges. What a concept. Still talking about it. Maybe it's structurally deficient. Maybe the wide nine doesn't work for this scheme. And maybe a podcast might have brought that up repeatedly. Sometime between the week 7 and week 11 game. I don't know who that could have been, Jake. But, you know, our services are for hire. It's free for all you folks out there, but our services are for hire for teams that want to get better at football at the NFL level. Or lower, honestly. We'll put in the time.
Listen.
You know, the draft we've already been given away for free. I know it's helped out a couple of teams in the league. So,
well, wait for a draft guide.
The draft guide is coming. You're going to kill me. You're going to try to kill me, right? That's what's going on with the draft guide?
What happens in the offseason, folks, is Dieter, you know, is with his family, has to take care of a child. And I'm just like, have you seen one
coming in February?
Right. And then I'm like, have you seen this defensive tackle? He was a D3 guy who transferred and he's 27, but I like him. I like him.
There's something there, Dieter. And then meanwhile, I'm reading all these texts at 3 o'clock in the morning as I'm trying to put one of my two screaming children back to bed, and I'm watching it on my phone. I go, oh, there is something there. Oh, there is good. Something. There's something good. Have you watched the merch?
Honestly, I can't wait.
Well, we might not have to wait much longer. I mean,
and that's why, like, again, I'm leaving this door slightly open, even though I've already shut it in my head. I'm just saying, possible for them to make a run, sure. You know, these games are close enough. I just don't think they've shown enough to say, oh, in those moments that matter, they will actually finish it, because they're error riddled, and you know, they lean on talent that is aching and not what it once was. And so against younger teams that just have more talent and more creativity, I think they're going to lose more times than not.
I agree with that. I'm not even using the term run right now. Like, if they can't beat Green Bay, now they have to beat Buffalo on the road. Like, I'm not seeing that. I can't see that happening. It might happen, but that's some like last ditch, dead cat bounce salvation. If they beat Green Bay, that would be the first win that they've had against a team with a winning record this year. Okay. So now I can at least entertain the notion of them maybe beating Chicago, or maybe beating the Rams on Thursday Night Football, or maybe beating Miami. They sure shit ain't beating Detroit, unless Detroit is just far, unless Minnesota collapses and they're just far and away, or Green Bay collapses.
Yeah. Unless like, Detroit's just slamming beers off of their, I don't know. I'm just about to mention Detroit things. I'm going to start mentioning engines and
just hot dogs.
Detroiters. They're just watching Detroiters. They forget to show up for the game.
That'd be an incredible life decision, because Detroiters is an underrated show. But like, they're not beating the fucking Lions on Monday Night Football, but they could beat Arizona in Arizona in week 18. And so now you're like, okay, how do they get to four more wins? And there's really not a sane take. I mean, of course you can just say, oh, they win their last four, or they win their last five. Like
four wins even might not do it. Well, because they screwed themselves over in the division.
I think it could if you beat the Rams and you beat Arizona as part of four.
Right. I mean, those two have to be it.
They have to win those games. And then I think the world of Green Bay, and in fact, if I had to pick a team to beat Detroit in the playoffs, I'd take Green Bay, because of the ceiling for that team is incredibly high, but their floor is pretty damn low too, because Jordan Love is more Brett Favre than he is Aaron Rodgers, right? He is a swashbuckler. He's like Baker Mayfield if Baker Mayfield had more physical talent. He's just out here, and every now and again, you're like, what on earth are you doing? And then sometimes
the sickest throw of all time.
Then he just rips it through, you know, four dudes in coverage, and you're like, this is living. I mean, he's a little Elway-ish in a way. Like, he just throws ropes. And LaFleur will put him in good enough situations throughout the game that you can live with the detriment. Now, you know, when they had Malik Willis in there, there's a very low ceiling, so they just ran the offense, and they can run the shit out of the ball because they have a really good offensive line. Young, good offensive line. What a concept. You think about the best teams in the NFL. You think about like Buffalo, Kansas City, Detroit. What do they all have in common, Jake?
Offensive lines.
I heard a great quote from Jim Harbaugh. This is just turning into a Jim Harbaugh tribute show now, where he said, offensive line is the only position group that makes everybody on the team better. And I'm like, I'm going to engrave that in wood and put it in like live, laugh, love font and put it around my house. The only position.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the Packers have like the greatest offensive line, but
I do have some.
Yeah.
I like him. I love Zach Tom, the right tackle. I think he's really good.
Yeah, he's very good.
You know, Myers isn't that great. I mean, there's some questions to be sure, but they pass protect really well, actually. And when they can get downhill and run the ball, they can run the shit out of it. Now, that is hit and miss. So, and lately it's been more hit than miss. So I think that that's also an ascending group as well. But their defense has some holes, right? Their defensive line, I'm not the biggest Rashawn Gary fan. He's clearly a good player. But their defensive line leaves something to be desired. Their linebacking core, hit and miss is the nice way to put it. And then the secondary, I think they might have the best safety tandem in the NFL going right now, which is something we kind of constantly say about the Packers. But like,
Xavier McKinney is so sick.
Xavier McKinney is sick, and Evan Williams is really, really good. Fourth round pick. Didn't see that one.
Dieter, are you going to say the line?
It might be destiny. I'm just saying. And then I like Javon Bullard. They play him as the nickel. We both like Bullard coming out.
I liked he was the only Javon Bullard was the only safety I had over Malik Mustafa.
I'm a little bit surprised on Williams. Do you remember where Williams went to school?
He sounds like I was going to say Pacific Northwest, Oregon.
Yeah. Oregon. Okay.
Oregon.
We missed him because when I watched him, he's definitely awesome. Him. He's awesome.
And they still have Jair Alexander.
Jair Alexander, who's playing out of his mind. So, like, the weak point is Nixon, which is typically the weak point in any argument is Nixon. But right. So that you can get something on this defense. The offense is volatile but explosive. And, again, the floor is so low that the Niners can find a way over it. If they play their best game of the year, they can win. No question about it in my mind. I'm not doing this whole – if I heard once, I heard it 25 times yesterday. The Niners have so much talent. I'm waiting for someone to show me where all this talent is because I didn't see much talent on the field on Sunday. Now, I know George Kittle is talented, and I know previous additions of certain players were exceptionally talented, but I don't see a lot of talent. I don't see a lot of game-breaking ability. This team didn't have an explosive play on Sunday. How is that a talented team? I'm willing to live with shitty runs and sacks if you have 20, 30-yard chunk plays. They don't have those anymore because they're not talented. They're functional at best.
And teams are doing a great job defensively to limit some of the stuff they do. And this goes to a bigger question about whether Brock Purdy is someone you should pay probably $60 million a year because that's just what the price is.
Yeah.
But there are moments... And I think Brock he's done a lot of good things. And there are times where you watch a film and you go, okay, we're probably a little more harsh in real time, see what he's looking at. But, you know, there are moments where it's like a hole shot, for example, and there's a corner sitting on it. You got a safety, and you've got somebody running a corner. And it's a tight window, right?
Yeah.
It's a throw where the corner's sitting on it. And it's, I get why he's not throwing it. But, especially with his skill set. But, and for, you know, people have talked only about Brock's arm talent. And I think that was overblown as being the only metric because I think it's easy to be like, oh, this guy got big arm. Yeah, no shit, Sherlock. Pretty easy to tell that. But Brock's processing was so good. His processing has come into question because the 49ers have less talent. They've been less innovative. Teams have accounted for them more. And so he's trusted the offensive line less. So that hasn't been there. And then when you don't have that and when teams are covering things better, that's when you're like, all right, I wish we had a guy like Justin Herbert, you know, whole shots, just ripping an absolute heater into a tight window.
Jordan Love does it. Yeah.
Brock doesn't have that arm talent. And so it gets tougher. It gets tougher.
Let me ask you something about the term innovative, or is that innovative? I love to mumble my Chicago accent. Innovative. if you have this is me hearkening back to my days covering Sun Belt and Conference USA football. Like, if you don't have a lot of talent, I don't want you doing a bunch of trick plays, right? Like, you think about the Naval Academy, Army, Air Force, right? They're at a consistent talent disadvantage compared to their peers. What do they run? They run the triple option. They keep it simple. They don't do anything big and fancy. People are asking again and again and again for Kyle to go into his quote-unquote bag. He doesn't have the talent to go into the bag. You can only go into the bag when you have dudes who can make defenses piss their pants in the process. If you have a guy, if your best player on offense, and I mean this right now, or at least if we go off Sunday, the best player you had was Juwan Jennings. Now, we all agree Juwan Jennings is a wonderful football player, a man's man. There's not a team out of the 32 that wouldn't want Juwan Jennings on their squad. Juwan Jennings is also slow and unable to separate more than a couple of inches against even the lamest of corners in this league. Right, he is getting by on willpower, grit, and smarts, and
he's shifty. He's shifty.
He gets open. I'm not saying he doesn't get open, but he is not. This is not Antonio Brown in his prime here. Right, this is not Randy Moss. This is a possession receiver who when he does get open, it's by the hair of his chinny chin chin. And I don't think what kind of bag can you go into when that's your best player? I think you need to bring it back to basics again. This is a conversation we had before the last Seahawks game. You all trying to run an offense that only existed in prior years when you had Debo Samuel at the peak of his powers, Christian McCaffrey, and you were able to get weird with it because you had guys who could get weird. Now you have a bunch of guys who are just, they play their position and they're pretty good at their position. How about you let the scheme do the work as opposed to trying to go deep into the bag? Because I think that when you're doing flea flickers and end arounds and all this stuff, that's maybe a little bit more exotic. And I think that's what people are really looking for, something exotic and different to look at. But when you do that kind of stuff, you're opening yourself up for turnovers in a way that you already have to handle just going through your day-to-day basics. I'm not saying run the option again, but
I got one for you. You know how they split out McCaffrey off to the side, and then sometimes they'll have Brock like fake a pitch to him,
the bump motion one. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he'll that'll often be a play action, and Brock takes one step and fires left. I think they should pitch it to McCaffrey and then run the slant, the shallow crosser screen that they run with Debo, where it's McCaffrey running and McCaffrey can keep it, or he can throw it to Debo.
Option RPO.
Yeah.
The coolest play,
because you're only blocking with your wide receivers.
Coolest play that the Niners have run in all of Kyle's time. This is one I come back to time and time again. They ran the option with Juice. It was a fullback handoff option pitch with Juice. And they had seen, I think, New Orleans do it against them in that crazy game that they had at the Superdome in 2021, I believe it was, where it was like 46, what, the Kittle game, where he just ran over everybody. The Jimmy is elite game, as I know it in the back of my mind. Because some idiot wrote that column. But he did put up 45 points. I mean, I don't know, a little high on this play.
Jimmy was good at one point.
He had a hell of a game there. But that was the coolest play. And I want to see more. If we're talking innovation, I want to see it in between the tackles in the run game. I want to see them mixing and matching maybe some blocking schemes as opposed to deep shots and all this stuff. Like, they can't run that stuff. All these stuff that Kyle wants to run, they can't run anymore. And it really does fuck up the rhythm of a game for them when you do an end around to Debo and he gets tackled.
Yeah. Yeah. And they also used to, I don't know if I ever actually believed Jimmy was good.
Are you still working through that?
He's good enough. Well, I just said he was good and my mind is playing tricks on me. He was good enough.
There were moments for sure.
There were moments. We drank the Kool-Aid. We drank the Kool-Aid for one
season. Yeah, and then I realized it was poisoned, and I'm like, you should stop drinking the Kool-Aid.
Correct.
Every dog has its day. And there was a moment there for maybe 6 months cumulatively where you're like, oh, I see it. I remember when Jimmy came in 2017, not to go way back here, but when he showed up, I remember thinking, even though they had won 5 games in a row, which was manna from heaven for a team that hadn't won shit in forever since Harbaugh left, really. And of course, they had to re-sign him at that point. But I just remember watching the film at the end of that season and being like, man, that dude threw like 20 interceptions and like 14 of them were dropped. Yeah, it was incredible. 100%. 100%. And then he has 2 bad games and tears his ACL in Kansas City week 3, I believe, in 2018. And then 2019 happens and 2019 was a great year. There's no question about it, but they didn't let him throw the ball in the playoffs. And when they made him throw the ball, it didn't work out all that great. So regardless, they're on to Brock Purdy now. To answer your question on Brock, on if he's a $60 million guy or not, that might be the overarching question. If we are in agreement that this is all done, that's cool. But as we lose Jake, but if we're in agreement that everything is said and over and completed and that there's nothing that's going to happen this season, in that case, let's see what Brock has. Because a quarterback who makes $60 million a year should have the ability to elevate his teammates. And that's not something that I've been able to say about Brock Purdy up until this point. I have not been able to look at this 49ers team and say, Brock is making these guys so much better. I don't feel like Juwan Jennings' success is entirely tied to Brock Purdy being a great quarterback. So, yeah, let's see. Let's see what Brock has. And let's judge accordingly at the end of the season there. Because if Brock elevates his game, no doubt in my mind, right? No doubt in my mind at all. But if Brock doesn't elevate his game, then we got to start talking franchise tag. If this guy's Kirk Cousins 2.0, you go the Kirk Cousins route again. That's where
I'm genuinely with you. I think, and the Ayuk thing was part of that, where I thought Ayuk should have been paid. I think he's a great player, but they would have been better served if they forced him to play on the fifth year option and they just played a little bit more hardball. And I don't know.
For no other reason than they don't have to restructure Debo and now tie yourself to him for an entire other season. Because we're now backtracking a little bit, but we do need to get into it a bit. Like, Debo restructured his deal so that he got one more year of effectively guaranteed money, and that if the Niners cut him or trade him, and they would have to do it with a post-June 1 designation a la Eric Armstead, they're still eating $10 million on the 25 books and the 26 books. And can you manage that? Sure. But when you're only having to pay Debo $16-17, it's like, well, shit, we should just keep Debo at that cost. Yeah. We're already paying him half of his salary. Might as well keep him around. So now you get another year of Debo. That doesn't mean you have to play him, but he's a team captain. He's Debo fucking Samuel. Like, kind of hard not to put him on the field. He's Kyle's favorite player ever.
Yeah. It's something where I just think you look at the roster up and down, and it feels like they need to be replenished at so many positions. Offensive line is aging and waning. Trent Williams is 37, if I'm not
mistaken. Don't worry, though. He just got that new contract.
And holding the whole thing together on, you know, with one bad ankle. You could make an argument for basically anywhere but right guard on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. You absolutely have to do something there and probably take multiple bites at it.
Yeah.
You know, in the draft, and then they can tell us why it's not worth drafting a tackle again.
I cannot get over that Harbaugh quote. Can't get over it. Makes your quarterback better, makes your run game better, and then makes your defense better because you can run the fucking football, so your defense doesn't have to be on the field that much. And Kyle overtly, much like with the special teams thing, it's an ideology. These are core tenets of his belief. Yes.
Chris Forster told us explicitly they believe that, you know, if you're going to have a pick, especially in those first or second rounds, you'd rather have the skill position guy. And I get that. You want to have great players and put the ball in their hands because an offensive lineman can't run with it. But when you have to throw hot every time and one of those guys that's your skill position guy is hurt and the other guys are getting older, like it just doesn't work as well. And so there's a balance with all of it, and it's all cyclical, right? And you have to get around. But fundamentally, that's their approach. And that's what they believe. And they don't have a good offensive line, and it's been a problem throughout this season. And they've whiffed in many drafts, and the Trey Lance trade and selection still haunts them, where they missed out on multiple first-round picks, and they could have had, I don't know, a defensive tackle or another defensive end. There's so many other positions that they could have reinforced, and now they're just getting rookies who are solid. But there's that middle ground of, you know, that's why their special teams is bad, and it's why they don't have a lot of replacements, because, you know, they just missed and they wasted picks on a trade that didn't work out, and they're paying for it right now.
They'll absolutely need to go get a tackle, and they'll need to get a young one. They'll absolutely need to get a guard, and they'll need to get a young one. And maybe they believe in the Nuge, maybe they don't, but they'll have to have someone who can reasonably step in at center next year for Brendel, because that's a very clear point of improvement, right? Like, you can upgrade there without a question. You're going from C-D+. If you can get a B there, that's a huge upgrade. I did a little number crunching yesterday, Hutch. The Niners have had 39 picks in the last five drafts. How many of those guys do you think, I think, are considered guys worth second contracts in the NFL? And this includes the most recent draft.
How far are we going back here?
It's just 5 years. So this would be 2020 to 2024. 39 picks. How many of those guys are worth second contracts in my book?
Juwan Jennings.
Yep.
Brandon Ayuk.
Yep.
Was he 2020?
Those
right?
are both 2020.
He's 2020.
Just give me an overall number and then we'll go through them. Out of 39, how many do you think they hit on? Might be a better way to ask it.
We're including this year's draft.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of tough.
It is tough. Give me a number.
Including this year's draft, I would say six.
Okay. I had 10. So you were even more pessimistic than I was. This year's draft, I got Pearsall, Green, Pooney, Mustafa. I think the question's still out on Garendo and Cowie. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you didn't let me do the math here.
Fair enough. 39 picks, 2023. Guys worth the second contract. One, Jair Brown. Jake Moody, don't see it. Not yet. D. Winters, don't see it. Robert Beal, clearly don't see it. Daryl Luter, no. Willis, no. Bell, no. Graham, no. Latu, already done. 2022, one, Brock Purdy. Drake Jackson, Tyrus Davis Price, Danny Gray. Those are your top 100, your picks in the top 105. Ooh. Spencer Burford, Sam Womack, who's actually a good player and does deserve a second contract. Problem is he's on the Colts. Nick Sakelj, Kalia Davis, Tyreek Castro Fields. Wow, Tyreek Castro Fields, shot from the past. One guy, 2022 draft, Brock Purdy. 2021 draft, three guys. The last three picks. Diamador Lenore, Talanoa Hufanga, and Elijah Mitchell, who I'm only including because had he not gotten so injured, Elijah Mitchell was unquestionably a hit. Talanoa Hufanga, I actually was never high on, but he was an all pro. So like he'll play somewhere in the NFL next year.
He did have an impact. He just, you know, I think he's a more limited player than he was believed to be.
So you can even make the argument one in that class in 2021, and that'd be Diamador Lenore, right? Because Trey Lance, Aaron Banks, Trey Sermon, Ambry Thomas, Jalen Moore, they could disappear tomorrow and it wouldn't affect anything. And then 2020, Javon Kinlaw, already gone. Brandon Ayuk, yes. Colton McKivitz, yes, but only because they literally gave him a second contract. Charlie Warner, he's gone. Juwan Jennings, clearly you got to stick around. 39 picks. It might have been six.
I mean, to be fair, that's probably right around
no
the average, but yeah, there's
no, it
there's
isn't.
A lot of miss.
It's not even close to the average when you have back-to-back drafts in which you have one good player. Like, you don't even have replacement-level players in this. What's Robert Beal to you? You know, what's D. Winters? Like, D. Winters...
Hey, he had a pretty good play against DK.
He did. And then he went and decided to not use his arms to tackle for the rest of the game because he's the Ralph Wiggum meme. And, you know, Spencer Burford, Danny Gray, Tyron Davis Price, Drake Jackson, they're not just missing, they're missing in catastrophic fashion. If not for the 2024 draft class, this might be a team that's drafting in the top five, given their injury situation.
I actually do not think that's an overstatement at all.
They might be drafted in the top 10 anyway. I mean, you get to go 7-10.
There are a lot of bad teams this year. A lot of bad teams.
I'll give you that. I do think that they stand a better chance of beating the Packers than we naturally want to give them credit for, having watched their recent film.
Yeah, and listen, they're in close games, right? You know, but I just, going back to what I said earlier before, you know, my entire internet crapped out.
Yeah, it went great.
Is that
it finally got the show I wanted, which was me talking into a camera by myself.
I love it. And I just think fundamentally they're a team that makes too many mistakes and is too hurt to overcome that stuff and finish in those final moments. And the defense has shown time and time again that when it comes down to it, they're good, not great. That's where I stand on it. And if they prove me wrong, they prove me wrong. But there's actually nothing to prove wrong because that's just a fact of how it's been.
Correct. We're speaking on what we've seen. I would like to see something else here. Now, let's give the folks out there who have stuck with us here and appreciative of anybody new coming in. We've we're getting this thing rolling here a little bit. I mean, it's one of these funny things where people are understanding that a bunch of guys with no agenda who just love ball might be worth somebody's time. And that's up to you, and it's free, and we're not, you know, we've had some opportunities to run some ads and stuff. They weren't companies that necessarily aligned with what we want to promote. Like, we're trying to keep this as holistic and realistic and down to earth as possible. We're doing this for the love of the game right now. And we'd like to change that, but we won't change that unless it's obvious. So appreciative of everyone who's on with us already. Usually on Tuesdays, we do Jake's film breakdown. We want to make sure that the audio listeners, of which there are still some, it might be me downloading it every time, but like there are still some audio listeners, be me and my extended family, but we don't want, it was unlistenable audio when we would break down the film on YouTube, because we'd be talking about things, pointing to things, and then we're on trying screen.
To describe, you know, the
formation. It wasn't working for anybody. It wasn't working for anybody. We love doing it. Jake does an incredible job of finding this stuff. We're going to give him the full corner to break it down. I am merely his consigliere in helping him break down what he sees. We're going to do that as a separate video. That's going to be Jake's film room. We're going to do it every Wednesday, I think is the plan, Wednesday or Thursday. It'll be a little middle of the week treat for everybody, but that's going to be YouTube only. We'll keep the Sunday night stream, the Friday afternoon stream, and this video on Tuesday. We'll keep all those separate and in the regular podcast feed, so you can subscribe and listen at your leisure, or watch whenever you'd like, and then you get the little bonus film room session in the middle of the week.
And one thing I'd add is I think this is a good spot for, if you got any questions, set it up where on Fridays maybe we answer some, turn it into a mini mailbag type situation. Whether that's a question about football, a take about cooking, or something else weird that's lingering deep in the recesses of your mind, shoot it our way.
I mean, I think that most people throughout the general course of a week think to themselves, what would Dieter and Jake say about this? And this is your opportunity to get that in. You could throw it in the comments section of this video or any other video. We read them all, even the mean ones. And we can wrap those up on a Friday as we go into the deep breakdown of 49ers and Packers, a game that, despite all of our dour negative energy, the sons of bitches might still win. So
sure, absolutely.
Looking forward to that show immensely. Looking forward to the film breakdown again. Film breakdowns from the Seattle game, sort of the big picture. It's like a theme. We're looking for big themes.
Right.
Stuff that's got a little evergreen content for you. Stuff that explains what's going right or wrong with the 49ers. That's a separate video. It's Jake's Film Room. We'll do those midweek. So appreciate you all hanging with us. And we'll talk to you all either in that film room or on Friday.
Thanks, folks.